Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So we have another layer that can be added to, or maybe better said, another chapter that can be added to the book of hype that seems to be growing for Georgia quarterback Jamie Newman. Now, for a moment, I'm going to pretend that JT Daniels doesn't exist, because the fact of the matter is we don't know if Daniels is going to be eligible. I have predicted, even if he is eligible, I believe that Jamie Newman will still emerge as Georgia's starting quarterback for this upcoming season, but opinions have a way of being wrong. There's a chance I'm wrong about that, but you can't talk about every single subject simultaneously. So just for a moment, this is kind of only about Jamie Newman for the reasons that I just expressed there. It has been interesting before the world even knew that JT Daniels might be coming to Georgia, that Georgia would be adding another quarterback either for 2020, 2021. It was very interesting to see the things that have been said throughout the offseason about Jamie Newman. People apparently really liked the potential of what the former Wake Forest quarterback might be able to do for Georgia, what he might be able to provide for the Bulldogs. The latest example of this comes from a guy that I like, Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, and he was writing this piece about the various tiers of quarterbacks. And, you know, listen, there's a lot of off-season content. Some of these stories have a way of kind of rhyming with each other. We've talked before about, you know, certain writers putting certain things in certain tiers. That's just kind of a staple of content this time of year. Well, Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, was putting quarterbacks in tiers, and Jamie Newman made his highest tier, along with the Trevor Lawrences and the Justin Fields and the top quarterbacks in college football. You know, Jamie Newman is right there at the top of that. And there was something in particular that Chip Patterson wrote at CBSSports.com in dissecting all of this that I thought was kind of interesting because it looks a lot like what we've seen before. What Chip Patterson writes, CBSSports.com, quoting Ryan Wilson, a draft expert, he says, CBS Sports NFL draft expert Ryan Wilson projects that Jamie Newman will join Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields as a top 10 pick in the 2021 NFL draft, noting that the move to Georgia has the former Wake Forest quarterback, listen to this, on everyone's first round radar. So Chip Patterson, good writer, CBS Sports, quotes a draft expert, Ryan Wilson, must be a pretty smart guy if he's doing this for CBS, saying everybody thinks he's a first round pick, or at least he's on the first round radar because he's now at Georgia. And I'm going to go so far as to say I think he can be a top 10 pick. Well, the funny thing about this is that the guy for CBS saying Jamie Newman may be a top 10 pick, that's not even the boldest statement in the last, like, 2 weeks when it comes to what Jamie Newman may be this year at Georgia and what Georgia may allow him to propel himself to be beyond that. Frankly, Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports, takes a backseat right now to the ESPN SEC Network analyst Greg McElroy, who goes on the Atlanta radio station Extra 106.3 FM this past week, and he took the notion of Newman as a top 10 pick. He upped the ante. McElroy, who knows the quarterback position, played at Alabama. He thought that Jamie Newman, he said it recently, has a chance to be a top 5 pick. Here is Greg McElroy on that point.
Guys, we're talking about top 5 pick upside here. Wow. I mean, he's that kind of upside. He's ridiculous. There are some nuance to his game that he needs to learn, but just as far as talent is concerned, there's not many out there in college football like him. So he's extremely accurate, big arm, needs to learn how to layer the football a little more. If I'm going just strictly on talent, I would absolutely favor Jamie Newman.
So listen, by the way, at the end there, that's a reference to Mac Jones, who he was asked to make a comparison between the Alabama quarterback, the Georgia quarterback. But here we are so far. We got a guy at CBSSports.com saying Jamie Newman's going to be a top 10 pick. Greg McElroy, who everybody knows, he's relatively famous analyst at this point in time, says, no, I think he'll be a top 5 pick. And before that, going back a couple of weeks ago, you got David Pollack, the former Georgia great, who goes on Get Up, like the main morning show on ESPN. A lot of dollars invested into making that a little bit of a TV benchmark, a little bit of a TV staple. Pollack himself, who, by the way, is, and in fact, it's kind of funny, Pollack's actually on my TV screen right now in front of me as I'm doing the show, but Pollack is not one of these guys that kind of gets out of control with the hype, especially in terms of the pro Georgia hype. This is not a guy who necessarily has a reputation of being a, you know, kind of runaway train of Georgia hype when he goes on ESPN. Pollock is careful with his words. In other words, he's a true pro. He's a professional. He wants to treat the analyst job the way that it's, you know, supposed to be treated. So he tries to come across as objectively as he possibly can. So it matters. It means something when Pollock goes on ESPN and says what he says a couple of weeks ago. Here's a reminder of that.
I tell you what, there's going to be a lot of pub and the train will continue to roll. If you watched last year, Jamie Newman is a kid that was in the ACC and that wasn't talked about much because he played obviously at a school that wasn't paid attention to like Wake Forest. He's a big, physical, strong kid, 6'3", 225 pounds, really good athlete, also makes ridiculous throws. Now he goes to Georgia with driving a Ferrari. I think he's going to have a huge year and be the first round pick in next year as NFL draft.
All right, so here's where things get very interesting. Pollock saying he thinks that Newman will be a first-round pick. Greg McElroy says top five pick. CBS guy says top 10 pick. Here's where things get really interesting. You know, I do this show every single day, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And if you just take the video portion of this alone, forget the folks who listen to radio podcasts, respond via Twitter, or, you know, comment section at the bottom of the page when we post the show at the worldfamousdognation.com. Just take the video comments alone. On an average day, we probably get 1,000 comments, something along those lines. It's almost no one who ever speaks as boldly about Newman as Pollock, McElroy, CBS Sports. There's a degree in which the hype that's been out there for Jamie Newman from the media, national media, people who are not necessarily, you know, invested in Dog Nation, there's a degree to which this is greater on the outside of the Dog Nation bubble than it is the inside of the Dog Nation bubble. Watch our comments, whether you watch on Facebook, watch on YouTube, or be back again soon on Twitter. Look at what gets said to me on Twitter or other places. You go to the forum at forum.dognation.com. You don't see a ton of Georgia fans, at least in my eyes. Maybe your experience is different. If it is, I'd love to hear from you. But you don't see a lot of Georgia fans to my eyes saying, I think that Jamie Newman's going to win the Heisman Trophy. And I think that Jamie Newman's going to come here. And I think he is going to be, you know, a top five, top 10 pick when it's all said and done. It's almost like Georgia fans themselves are being a little more careful with this than maybe the national media is. Now, I think there's a reason as to why, and I'll explain that in a moment. But let me first of all say that when you listen to, you know, what the CBS writer writes, what Pollock has said before, what McElroy has said before. And by the way, all of these things are essentially just a representation of a lot of the other, maybe less noticeable hype that Jamie Newman has gotten. The one consistent theme you see with all of this is, and I think this is absolutely true, even if Jamie Newman doesn't fully ascend to the heights that some people think is possible for him, there's no doubt that Newman views Georgia as a pathway to what he doesn't currently have. You know, Newman's got the skill set. We've seen the big strong arm. There are videos up there, dognation.com right now, of him working and throwing the football. You know, he's got the athleticism. We know that he uses his legs probably better than any starting quarterback at Georgia has in quite some time. We know all of that. But what we haven't seen Newman do is playing a ton of big games. Georgia provides that opportunity. We haven't seen Newman necessarily play in an offense that prepares him for the NFL. Newman believes that what Georgia provides. And I think to the extent that all of the analysis of Newman has kind of said, hey, he's going to come through the Georgia program and be better on the other side, I think it's pretty clear that Newman sees it that way, and I think it's probably fair to assume that will indeed be the case, that Newman will be better prepared for the NFL having spent a year at Georgia than he would have been spending another year at Wake Forest. However, why is it that Georgia fans themselves don't necessarily fully buy into all of this? Why is it that they're a little careful in terms of, really matching the level of hype and in some cases hysteria that seems to exist there for the national media? I think the unfortunate but true point on this is there's a degree to which Georgia fans feel like they've been here before and maybe let down in the midst of all of that. I want to go back in time to just a year. Now, this is not meant to, poke at Jake Fromm or take a jab at Jake Fromm because, listen, what happened last year for the good and for the bad and everything in between has kind of been water under the bridge at this point in time. But I was looking at an old, preseason write-up from last year. What were people saying about Jake Fromm a year ago in comparison to what they're saying about Jamie Newman right now? And, you know, honesty compels me to admit that some of the hype and discussion that was out there about Fromm a year ago does sound a little bit like what's out there for Jamie Newman right now. Let me show you this from Athlon Sports, who had Fromm before the start of last season ranked as the number 4 quarterback in the entire country. And what the Athlon preview said of Fromm a year ago was that he's one of the best NCAA signal callers. He's listed number number four comes just ahead of Oregon's Justin Herbert. I think we may have lost some of that there, but nonetheless, you know, ranked ahead of Justin Herbert, just behind Sam Ehlinger. That's where he is as the number four quarterback in all of college football. So Georgia fans just kind of feel like they've been here before. They feel like they've heard that about Jake Fromm, and for whatever reason, whatever, you know, reason you want to ascribe to this, Fromm did not go on to have that kind of season a year ago. So the question becomes, what do you do with all this then? If Georgia fans are a little hesitant to believe in the Jamie Newman hype because they've bought into hype before, only to be let down, here's what I think the final summary of all of this is. I think it speaks to the importance that the new offensive coordinator, Todd Monken, has in terms of what he brings to Georgia. Ultimately, what Georgia fans really care about more than anything else is not where Jamie Newman gets drafted, but how many wins does he lead Georgia to, assuming he's the starting quarterback. But what we saw last year at LSU, and I'm a broken record on this, but I'm going to keep saying this over and over again, leaders are repeaters, that Joe Burrow, the amazing success that he enjoyed, the tune of 60 touchdown passes, everything else, we saw him in 2018 with almost the same level of talent around him that he also had at 2019. But the offense in 2019, way more effective, way more explosive, way more dangerous. It was just a better overall offense. Virtually the same players, better results. The only difference was the presence of Joe Brady as the passing game coordinator. I think that speaks to the importance that exists for Todd Monken in this Georgia offense. The truth is that Jake Fromm a year ago did have all the requisite skills to be a great quarterback, but it was not a great season. I blame a deficient offense. And by the way, James Coley's not here anymore. Same thing is true for this upcoming season. Will Jamie Newman be a Heisman finalist, as some have said he might have a chance to be, the Vegas odds included? Will he have a chance to be a first-round pick the way that I just gave you three different examples of? I'm not quite so sure, but I do know this. He's got the athleticism, he's got the arm, he's got everything else. He's got the requisite skills there as well. But is Todd Monken, as an offensive coordinator, more suited to get out of him what he has inside of him and what he came at Georgia to put on display to the world? That's the most important question to me. What role does Todd Monken play in all of this season? That, to me, determines how much of this hype Jamie Newman indeed lives up to. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. It's good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast, the Apple Player, the Google Player. Post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. We're available on Spotify. Pretty much anywhere you look to find Dog Nation Daily as a podcast, you ought to be able to find it. We certainly appreciate our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, they are experts at a couple different things, handling waterproofing issues for you and also foundation issues. And listen, when you're walking around your house and, you know, this time of year, maybe you've been home more than you're used to because you've been working from home, things like that, you kind of notice things, those horizontal cracks or those wet spots that didn't used to be there. It gives you a little bit of a feeling, in almost like a pit in your stomach, a little bit of, oh, what's going on here? It's easy want to put that off, easy want to not worry about that. But the truth is, anything that should be done eventually needs to be done immediately, which means you need to take advantage of the expertise that Engineered Solutions of Georgia has for you. They're very easy to get in touch with. They got two full-time engineers on staff. They are proud partners of UGA, which means it's fun to do business with them. Supporting them is, in a way, almost like supporting UGA. That's really good. If it's a simple fix to your problem, waterproofing or a foundation issue, they'll just give you the simple fix. But if it's something more substantial than that, you want to trust them, as I said before, because they do have two full-time engineers on staff. They're super smart folks. They have dedicated their life to learning everything that can be learned about foundation and waterproofing issues. They're also easy to get in touch with. Phone number, very easy to remember. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. It's going to be Mike Griffith here coming up in just a moment. Before we do that, I'm going to do a little bit on this now and do a lot more on it later on. Dion Glover, the father of the five-star cornerback Tony Grimes, had a very interesting tweet. We have a tendency to read into tweets around here when it comes to recruiting. This is an interesting one. We'll talk about this for a moment, get a little bit more into it later on. But obviously, we talked yesterday about the fact that Grimes has got a decision coming up on June the 30th. Well, the father of Grimes, Dion Glover, let me show you this tweet on the screen here. I think this is pretty good. On the subject of how all this is playing out, Coach Glover, who's Tony Grimes' father, says, when a head coach tells you, quote, no matter what program your son chooses, you and I are going to be friends for the rest of my life. You got to rethink some things. So it's not obvious from that tweet that Glover's referencing Kirby Smart here. He was asked in the follow-up if he was talking about Mac Brown from UNC. He said no. He thinks Mac Brown's a great guy, but it wasn't Brown who said this in particular. Certainly, this sounds like the kind of thing we've heard other recruits say about Kirby Smart before. Smart seemingly really good at building relationships. Later on, I'm actually going to let you hear something that Kirby Smart has said on a very similar topic during the coronavirus lockdown of how you do maximize your relationship building skills at a time in which the regular tools that recruiters have at their disposal, things like, you know, visits and things like that, aren't quite available right now. But a very interesting statement from the father of the five-star cornerback, Tony Grimes. We're going to get more into this a little bit later on in the show as Georgia tries to pursue another elite prospect for the 2021 class. For now, it's good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. For more on everything going on with UGA, let's talk to Mike Griffith.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Not a normal day for Mike to be with us, but he's good enough to step in on a Tuesday. Nice to be able to talk to him. By the way, Mike had very interesting discussion yesterday on the Dog Nation video channel, so I hope you got a chance to see this with SEC Network's Paul Feinbaum. Paul, always a very outspoken guy. This was a very good conversation, and the good thing about the video channel is if you missed it live, it's still up there on YouTube. You can still find it on Facebook there as well. It was good stuff. Mike, thanks for being here on the program today. Hope you're doing well.
Appreciate it, BA. Thank you.
So let me start with where I was before you joined us on the topic of Jamie Newman. I made my case for why I think, in terms of seeing Newman live up to some of the hype that's out there, I just referenced a thing from CBS Sports. We've seen some of the other stuff that's been out there as of late. I think it puts a lot of the onus on Todd Monken this year to get the most out of the Georgia offense. However, I want to pivot the conversation with you somewhere else. You wrote this weekend at DogNation.com about a report that had been out there in regards to, you know, Newman speaking to some boosters, Newman being made available to them on the part of Georgia. And, you know, Mike, what I said on the show yesterday is maybe I have a tendency to read into things sometimes too much, but the fact that, you know, Newman is being presented to maybe one of the most important constituencies Georgia has, those people who kind of help pay the bills for how the football program operates, that to me does not feel like the kind of thing a Georgia does unless it felt pretty good about what it had in Jamie Newman. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, to me, that's telling me that since Jamie Newman has shown up, he is taking care of business, and that he has responded to the challenge. And had he not, I'm with you. There's no way Kirby puts him out in front. And, you know, BA's right. You know, one of the things we do as reporters, and obviously BA was on this right from the jump, is we read the tea leaves because we know that Kirby Smart decides who to send out. You know, at many other places, most other places, as a reporter, you can request to talk to whoever you want. But at Georgia, Kirby decides who gets to talk. So anytime Kirby assigns players to talk to the media, you're trying to go, aha, you know, he's sending John Fitzpatrick out here. That tells me John Fitzpatrick or Michael Barnett are practicing well. And then there's certain players that you hardly get at all. For example, James Cook maybe once last year. And you go, I wonder if James isn't taking care of business. So that's not always the case. Sometimes kids have classes, but to BA's point, I think the presence of Jamie Newman, as well as Jamari Salyer and Richard LeCount, tells me these are some leading candidates for permanent captain positions.
Yeah, I want to get into the Salyer thing in a moment, too, because I think there's some interesting thoughts kind of out there on him as well. Before that, to continue the Newman conversation for a moment, I think when you look at some of the so-called hype that's been out there for Newman, you've chronicled a lot of this at DogNation.com, there is kind of a central theme that emerges in terms of why he chose UGA, and I think this matters. You know, the idea that he's, I'm going to use my own words here, no one has said this, but the idea that he's almost treating Georgia as a car wash, that he steps in the front end of the program as one kind of player and emerges through the program as another kind of player on the other end. I think that's a very interesting theme that has kind of shown up in a lot of this of, hey, he chose Georgia and now he's more on the radar than he otherwise would have been. What do you make of the fact that that particular theme seems to show up, and whether it's Greg McElroy on Atlanta radio station, David Pollack on ESPN, you know, random writer from CBS Sports, whatever else, the fact that that aspect of this theme seems to show up over and over?
I love your car wash analogy, BA. That's hilarious. It's true, though, and it's true for all the grad transfer. I mean, Joe Burrow went through the LSU car wash and didn't even have to go to class on campus, and they want to retire his number. He drove through the car wash and bought it at LSU. You don't even have to go to class there to get your number retired at LSU, apparently, or sign there out of high school, for that matter. But, yeah, I mean, of course, everybody wants to find their best fit and where they can showcase their abilities. You got one shot at it, one opportunity. You look at some of the talent that Georgia has brought in at receiver. You look at the talent on the offensive line. And to your point, you know, Todd Monken is a guy who's coached in the NFL and has been very quarterback-friendly. So I can understand why, for Jamie Newman, still kind of close to home, why Georgia was an attractive option. And likewise, you know, you see Jamie now, you see some of the workouts that he's done on campus. You see him throwing the ball, you see his physique, and you can see why Kirby Smart zeroed in on him as soon as his name was in the transfer portal.
Yeah, you mentioned the physique part of this. You know, when I've seen some of the videos that have been out there of him lately, that's one of the things that kind of shows up of, hey, you know, I don't know how much intricate offense Georgia gets a chance to install because of the weird offseason. I don't really know exactly how they plan on using Jamie Newman. But if you want a guy who can absorb the wear and tear that's going to come, if you choose to be an athletic quarterback, if you've got the athleticism, that's the choice you obviously would make. Anyone who could do it would. But if you're going to withstand that within the challenge that goes along with playing in the SEC, you've got to have a little meat on the bone to be able to deal with that. And Jamie Newman certainly seems to be bringing that to the table right now.
Yeah, he's a big guy, no doubt. And, you know, and Georgia has some other quarterbacks behind him that are capable. And so maybe you'll be a little bit more likely. You know, last year, BA, if Jake Fromm had gotten hurt, you know, Stetson Bennett wasn't going to lead you to the promised land. And I think that kind of had an effect on how often Jake kept the ball in the read option. Obviously not Jake's strength either, but I do think they were very, very wary of that, especially the first half of the season. With Newman, though, I think Jamie's looking to throw the ball more than he did at Wake in terms of the pass-run ratio. I don't think you're going to see 129. I think 128 or 129 of his 180 carries were actually designed runs. I don't think you're going to see that many, but I do think he's going to be able to buy time and scramble. And as Terrence Edwards said last week, you know, pick up 10 yards on 3rd and 9. And that's something that's been missing from the Georgia offense under Kirby Smart.
Yeah, I don't want to spend the entire time talking about Newman, but you brought up a point I want to make sure I respond to. As a fan, I'm not an analyst by trade, I'm just a fan, but as a fan, design runs are not my favorite quarterback runs. My favorite quarterback run, the kind of thing the Georgia offense just hasn't really had, is that idea of making something out of nothing. I think sometimes, you know, I think sometimes offensive coordinators have a tendency to overcomplicate things with a lot of design runs, when the truth is the ability to run in a play otherwise designed to be a throw, that to me what can be so dangerous when, you know, the defense on 3rd and long is, you know, trying to cover every receiver and trying to handle every situation, and the quarterback decides it's not there and just tucks it and runs it. You watch the way that can be so demoralizing for an opposing defense. When I picture, and I'm speaking as a Georgia fan here for a moment, but when I picture Jamie Newman running, that's the kind of run I really picture, the idea of, you know, tucking it and running because there was nothing else there. That to me is the most fun way to think about an athletic quarterback being utilized.
I agree. It's kind of like when they hit the shot as the shot clock buzzer expires.
It's a lot like that.
Fadeaway. You do everything right, then the quarterback still finds a way to break your back on the scramble. And, you know, like Joe Burrow made a living out of that last year for all the talk about LSU schemes. A lot of it was just Joe Burrow breaking people down on 3rd downs.
You know, I think that Burrow's a pretty good example of that, because I don't think he was maybe quite as athletic as the LSU offense made him look a year ago. There was just a lot of room to run at times, which he certainly took advantage of. Let me switch gears and talk about something else for a moment. In one of the videos we've seen of Newman lately, he's been throwing to Trey McKitty. There are reports out there that McKitty is indeed in Athens now and, you know, kind of getting going as a graduate transfer coming in from Florida State. Mike, I believe that McKitty is a very important member of this team this upcoming season. We all remember a year ago, a relatively unheralded grad transfer in Lawrence Cager turned out, when healthy, to be a really important player for Georgia. I'm not going to tell you that McKitty is as good as Cager was a year ago, but with a lot of uncertainty with the tight end position, kind of an unusual tweet from Rylan Godey last week that made it maybe seem like he's still dealing with a little bit of an injury situation. Obviously, Darnell Washington comes in as a freshman that's kind of hard to get up and running really quickly at a position like tight end in the SEC. John Fitzpatrick, who I do like, Brett Scyther's there as well. But the notion of Georgia needing that experience, that seasoned veteran presence that McKitty provides, caught some balls in Florida State's offense a year ago. I think Trey McKitty's a pretty important player for Georgia this season and a potential bellwether of just how good this Georgia offense is going to be.
Yeah, I know. You've been bullish on him. You called him out. I like to listen. You were the first one on Jordan Davis a couple years ago, so I'm keeping my ear to ground on McKitty. You know, when I talked to Mark Richt about him, DA, you know, he passes the Mark Richt test. And I think Mark Richt was pretty good with the tight ends and recruited some good tight ends. And Trey was a guy that he recruited when he was at Miami, I believe. I think he said he tried to get him, but he thought, you know, he said he's the consummate tight end, the guy that can catch the ball effectively, you know, make the plays that you need. You know, I always say this, though, and I still remember Tennessee when they had Jason Witten, and Jason Witten was Casey Clawson's go-to target, and that was bad news, because if your tight end is your primary receiver, then you don't have very good receivers. So, you know, I do think McKitty can be big on third downs. I do think there's the potential for him to create some matchups. I mean, heck, Eli Wolf catches the 3rd-and-7 game last year that clinches the win over Florida. And I do think McKitty is probably a step up from Eli. I don't know that he's Isaac Nauta, who had those 30 catches, but also some very clutch catches in 2018. But to your point, he serves a very important role when you look at the attrition with Werner and Wolf moving on. And some questions, I believe, about Washington. You know, perhaps some surgical procedure that we don't know the extent of. You have some, and a freshman coming in at that. So I would agree with you. He's a very important player, but I don't know that I think he's going to get more than 25 catches if George Pickens takes care of business, if Jermaine Burton is who we think he is, and if James Cook is going to get those 8 to 10 touches a game.
All I'll say is, from a philosophical standpoint, I always want my fourth option on the field to be a tight end, right? I like the idea of the versatility the tight end provides. I'm a fan of the tight end position. So I certainly would agree with you that if McKitty becomes the second leading receiver on this team, then maybe some of the other guys haven't performed as well as maybe they could. But when your option on the field includes a reliable tight end, and the SEC especially with the running game is always going to be a big part of what goes on there, things are just better because of it. There's a reason why the Oklahoma offense is more effective than some of these other Big 12 offenses, and part of that's the fact that Oklahoma still uses tight end type players in that kind of, you know, that sort of fourth option. It's not a bunch of, you know, slot receivers spread out all over the field. You know, you still got some size out there on the field. That's the value that the tight end provides, even for Monken, who kind of has some of that Big 12 stuff in him. The ability to use a tight end, I still think is a pretty important component of SEC football.
Yeah, and it also kind of, you know, just to take a half a step further into some of Kirby Smart's mentality, having those big receivers that can block in space, you know, Riley Ridley and Jason Stanley, I mean, those guys were the ones that sprung those 60 and 70-yard swift runs that we didn't see last year. You know, the smaller receivers, the Tyler Simmons, the Demetrius Robertson, they're not able to effectively control. I'm excited about Justin Robinson. I mean, here's a guy that's 6'4", 220, and I know, you know, he high points the ball well and maybe a red zone target. But as much as he does that, this kid's a physical player who's going to be able to block out in space. And we hear a lot about Kiaris Jackson, another Kirby kind of guy that gets it done in space. I think a Peach County guy, BA, as I'm learning Peach County now.
Oh, yeah.
A part of the language here in Georgia when you talk high school toughness. And, you know, if Georgia's got those kind of guys on the perimeter, and throw McKitty out there as well, because you can split him into the slot and make those open field blocks, that's really good news for the running backs.
All right, let me mention a couple other names before we're done. You talked about Jamari Salyer a little earlier. I do think it's really interesting that, you know, we've seen a lot from Salyer thus far this offseason. Pretty clearly, he's worked on getting slimmed down. He seems to think that's an important component of his ability to be the best offensive tackle that he can be. Salyer reminds me a lot of what Georgia once had in Isaiah Wynn, a player that I guess maybe I thought was more suited to play the interior of the offensive line, and yet he went on to be a very good offensive tackle. Ultimately, you just want good football players in the field. There's no doubt to me that Salyer is clearly one of Georgia's five best offensive linemen. The fact that he's, you know, seemingly been at the forefront of so much of the conversation thus far this offseason seems to suggest he's ready to step there in that leadership role. I think that, he, you know, Salyer's got the look, the feel of, he went to high school with Andrew Thomas, so he kind of has some of that, you know, in him, you know, reminds you of Andrew there a little bit. I got a lot of faith and trust in Jamari Salyer as a fan, even though he's just now going into his first full season as a starter. I got a lot of confidence in Salyer right now.
Yeah, and he should, because I thought he performed really well in the Sugar Bowl, albeit at right tackle. Cade Mays didn't perform quite as well at left tackle. But I thought Jamari did a nice job at right tackle against a really good Baylor line that had set a record for most sacks in the season. Everybody kind of just brushes that Sugar Bowl away, but that was a really good Baylor team with something to play for. And he performed well. I think what I like about it is that he's responded to Matt Luke. You know, when a kid works that hard in the off season, and I do think working with Andrew Thomas helped quite a bit, but when you respond to the coaching to the point where you say, you know what, I lost all this weight because I'm not sure where I'm going to play. I've got to be ready to compete anywhere. You know, that's a team-first attitude. You know, that's what you want your leader to say is, hey, I'm ready to do whatever Coach Luke asked me to do. He told me to lose weight, so I just kept losing weight, and I'll see where I end up and wherever I can compete on the line. I mean, if everybody goes in there with that attitude, that's really good. Now, we all know Trey Hill will probably start out back at center. And Justin Schaefer, I thought, performed well at left guard in place of Solomon Kinley until he injured his neck. Kirby said some good things about Justin and his offseason workout. So if you've got that left side of the line done, B.A., you know, then to me the big question becomes right guard and right tackle. And, you know, the mystery man to me is still Ben Cleveland. I mean, what are we going to get? I'm still shocked he wasn't eligible for the bowl game. Is he going to be big again? Is he going to lose weight? Will he be more mobile? Because that's a guy with a lot of upside that I just don't know where he's at, and I haven't heard a lot about. But Jamari Salyer, I would agree with you. I think the cream rises to the top. He came in very highly rated, and I think he's going to have the sort of season that's going to show why.
Mike, last thing, for the folks who didn't get a chance to see your interview, part of it anyway, with Paul Feinbaum yesterday on the Dog Nation video channels, give folks a little bit of a taste of what they missed and why they should go check it out for themselves.
Yeah, you know, it's always fun to talk with Paul, and obviously, BA, everybody knows about Dog Nation and the work you do with Dog Nation Daily, so it's an easy interview to land. But Paul did a nice job last night talking about the rivalries, I thought. You know, talked to him about Florida, Alabama, some Georgia Tech comments in there. And then he just kind of talked about where he thought college football was. And to your point, there's another half of that interview that we will air at a later date. Actually, a couple more halves. I guess there's another third, right? A couple thirds to that interview that will air later. But always fun to hear Paul talk about Georgia. You know, when he does his show, he has to skip around and cover 14 schools. And, you know, you don't really know how in tune he is with each school until you give him a chance to elaborate. And I thought he got into a little bit of that last night, and it was interesting.
Yeah, I'll invite folks to check that out, either the Dog Nation Facebook page. It's probably the easiest to find on the Dog Nation YouTube page. You can see that there and check that out. Be a YouTube subscriber, by the way, to Dog Nation if you haven't already done that. Mike, I know it's not your normal day to be with us, but we certainly appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia Today. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at DogNation.com, and, of course, catch up with you again on our program very soon as well.
Thanks, B.A. Have a great one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, good stuff there with Mike Griffith. Appreciate him being a part of the program here today. We'll kind of transition here, and we'll do our SEC Through and talk about some of the stuff going on around the rest of the SEC. I'll also want to mention this there as well. Make sure you check out the top of the page of DogNation.com today. Very interesting stuff from our friends at the Technical College System of Georgia. They got a great thing going on right now. You can find out more about driver's ed vacation. They got some driver's ed courses that are online right now. This is live classroom instruction. It's totally online, and it's going to prepare you to be ready for the in-person driving portion of the driver's ed class. So you can either go to DogNation.com, find out more about this from our friends at the Technical College System of Georgia, or check them out online at tcsg.edu/driver's ed. You can see it on the screen there. It's actually tcsg.edu/driver's ed, or go to the top of the page, dognation.com. That'll get you to the link right there on all of that. You can see what's going on there with the Technical College System of Georgia. Some really good stuff, just preparing you for some real practical life learning and some knowledge. Very, very good. All the way around Technical College System of Georgia, including the driver's ed stuff, DogNation.com, top of the page. You can go to and find out more about that. All right, moving on to our SEC through here for just a moment. I want to follow up on We were talking about off the top of the program. And what I said was that I am firmly in the belief that that the thing that makes the difference for Jamie Newman this year, and if you want to believe that the hype surrounding Newman this time is going to be different from like maybe say when Jake Fromm was hyped as one of the top quarterbacks in college football a year ago, it didn't quite work out that way. If you want to believe in all of that, I've said, well, the pressure's on Todd Monken to be different. The job for the new Georgia offensive coordinator really matters there when it comes to stuff like that. It is important to note, though, that there's someone pretty high-profile nature who's out there right now kind of touting a different idea. And I thought, at least to be fair and balanced, let me bring this into discussion. And that was very interesting that the Big Ten Network recently did an interview with Urban Meyer, former Ohio State coach, also a former Florida coach. And when he was asked, hey, who are your picks to potentially win the national championship, he made what I thought was a pretty interesting point. Now, I don't necessarily agree with this from Georgia's perspective, but this is a pretty interesting point. He said, like, the one thing that you've got going on at both Clemson and Ohio State right now is you've got, you know, returning quarterbacks coming back to work in the same system. You know, Clemson's been running the same system now for a while. They've kind of transitioned from out of the Jeff Scott era, out of the Chad Morris era, but the system itself is going to remain in place. And that's what Trevor Lawrence is going to be running. Same thing for Ohio State. Ryan Day now getting more seasoned, more acclimated there as head coach. You've got Justin Fields returning there in that regard for this upcoming season. So he says, when you look at winning the national championship, at a time in which the coronavirus lockdown is you know changing the way that we go about our business and changing the way that we do things when it comes to college football, the fact that you've got these programs working with the same system, working with the same quarterbacks, that in itself is going to be an advantage that they're able to utilize. I think it's a fair enough point. You know, I think it's certainly worth considering when it comes to all of that. However, when you look at Georgia, you know, just look at football all the way around. Continuity is only valuable if the thing that you want to continue is working before. And Georgia, in the case of James Cole a year ago, that was not the situation. It was not working out that way before. You had to make that change. So ultimately, the presence of a new system at Georgia, I think, is ultimately probably a pretty good thing. I certainly understand the argument that Meyer's making, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad argument necessarily. But in Georgia's case, I'm not worried about the lack of continuity, either with the starting quarterback or with the offensive coordinator, because ultimately, I think the thing that really matters is an upgrade in the system that Georgia's running. Another story, this is not necessarily SEC-related, but it did kind of tie into some of what's been out there with Georgia recruiting as of late. Remember we used to talk about Quentin Somerville a good bit? Somerville was interesting to Georgia fans as a four-star defensive end. He was interesting to a lot of Georgia fans because he's from Saguaro High School out there in Arizona, same high school that recent Georgia signee Keely Ringo went to. Not really quite sure how much of a recruiting priority Somerville ended up being for UGA, just given some of the other guys that Georgia's been kind of involved with there, the Dallas Turners, people like that come to mind. But Somerville has made his pledge. He is committed to Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. So worth pointing out, a guy we've talked about before from a recruiting standpoint has made his college decision. He's going to be going to Michigan here. So Georgia will not dip back into the toes of Saguaro High School in Arizona again for another recruit, as Somerville apparently going to Michigan instead. One more SEC through story. Actually, I'll do a couple more here quickly. On the serious front, Kylan Hill, the leading returning rusher in the SEC, has spoken out pretty big. He's a Mississippi State running back, spoken out pretty big against the proposed changes to the Mississippi State flag. You've seen this. They still have the Confederate battle emblem on their state flag. There's been a lot of push to change that. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey came out last week and said the SEC would not hold any championship events in the state of Mississippi until that was changed. Conference USA, which has, you know, some tentacles stretching into the state of Mississippi, is going to say the same thing. And now Kylan Hill has come out with a very forceful statement saying that he will not play for Mississippi State until the state flag is changed. That is a story worth watching there, coming out of Starkville with a very bold statement from Kylan Hill. And then the final SEC through story to get to here today. So Greg Sankey goes on the Dan Patrick show yesterday. And so Patrick was kind of, you know, questioning him on the basis of what looks to be a lot of negativity about some players testing positive as of late. You've even seen this across college, you know, outside the boundaries of college football. Some of the Major League Baseball camps that had been open in anticipation of the start of Major League season. Philadelphia Phillies had some positive tests and some things like that, you know, not too long ago. You've had kind of a lot of that out there right now. And I thought in response to all of this, Dan Patrick essentially asking Greg Sankey, are you sure we're going to have a season? I thought that Sankey had a pretty good answer here. And this is, I think Sankey's been great on the coronavirus. I don't know that he's always been great on every single issue involving the SEC, but I think he's been very strong on corona. Here's what he says. I was prepared for some positive tests. The goal was never to expect zero. That's just not reality around us. Strong words from Greg Sankey, who goes on to tell Dan Patrick. The plan was test when they arrive. We had positive tests when people came back. We have embedded medical professionals in our athletics program. That's part of what I think gets missed is the level of care provided for young people on our campuses on a daily basis. I think it's really strong from Greg Sankey. I think it's worth remembering all of that. No one that is in favor of football returning and returning at the pace in which it's currently returning, no one that I know of who is in favor of that is saying that the coronavirus is not real and it's not, you know, something to be respected and taken care of. We obviously, you know, chart those stats and pay attention to that kind of stuff every single day. However, the degree to which that certain factions of the national college football media treat it as a scandal every single time a positive test emerges, I don't know. You almost wonder how anyone could miss the point that badly. As Sankey says, of course there are going to be some positive tests. Nationally, the infection rate across the country right now is about 5%, or at least the positive test rate, I should say. The positive test rate right now is about 5%. So when you're testing people, you're going to have some positive tests return back. That's just the way it goes. Some cases you're going to have more, and some cases you're going to have fewer than you expect. But overall, the overall positive test rate is going to be about what it is for everybody else across the country. You're going to have some of that, in other words, and the presence of a few positive tests when you've got medical professionals embedded, when you've got a plan in place to mitigate all of this, it doesn't necessarily require a shutdown. Yes, I've seen what's gone on at Houston. The truth is, they didn't test people coming in. I've seen what's happened at Kansas State, where they have, I guess, slowed down or stopped briefly their, you know, workouts to start the start of the season. That's their choice to make. In fact, the matter is, I haven't read anything from the SEC that makes me think in any way the SEC is going about what it's doing irresponsibly. So I think some of the stuff that's out there on this, I think a very appropriate response from Sankey yesterday to kind of push back on this the way that he did, and I want to make sure we brought that into our show today. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, I want to get our attention back to Georgia just for a moment. And I want to go back to something we were talking about a little earlier in the show as well. So I mentioned the tweet from Deion Glover. That's the father of the five-star cornerback Tony Grimes. And we don't know yet where Grimes is going to go. He's going to make his announcement on June 30th, nor do we know necessarily who Glover was referencing in the tweet that I shared, although Glover did explain that it was not North Carolina's Mac Brown, although he does have a very favorable opinion of Brown. Most people probably do. But let me show you the tweet once again, if you don't mind, on video, just to kind of give some context. You don't want to play an audio clip from Kirby Smart. What Deion Glover said is that some head coach told him that no matter what program your son chooses, you and I are going to be friends for the rest of my life. He says, when that is what a head coach says, you got to rethink some things. So we don't necessarily know if that was Kirby Smart who said that. But for those of us who've been following the way that Kirby Smart has been recruiting during the coronavirus lockdown, you certainly get the sense that could be Kirby Smart. It certainly sounds like something Smart might have said. In fact, Smart, going back a couple of weeks ago, it's been almost a couple of months ago now, kind of got into what his philosophy has been during this time in which you're not hosting visitors, you're not doing things like that, but clearly forming those connections and those bonds with families, more important than ever. Here's what Kirby Smart said about that going back to April.
It's really been FaceTime, communication, talking to family members. We're checking on the well-being of everybody we recruit. We're not making it about selling Georgia as much as it is, hey, what's going on in your community now? How is your high school dealing with this? You know, how are your grandparents? How are your parents doing? Making it personal and trying to talk to them. I know these kids are getting bombarded because, you know, recruiting is a competitive market. And as you can imagine, they're getting a lot of calls because a lot of college coaches don't have anything going on right now, and they're calling on these kids a lot.
The thing that Kirby Smart does not say there that he probably could is for a lot of these coaches who've had their normal recruiting, I guess, philosophy upended because of the coronavirus, not everyone's as good at forming a natural bond, you know, good communication. Truly, frankly, not every coach really cares about a player's family. They just care about how that player can perform for them on the football field. So from that standpoint, certain coaches are just going to be better than that than others. I've always said when it comes to Georgia's own recruiting efforts, the ability, not just for Kirby, but the assistant coaches that he employs, their ability to sort of form authentic connections with the families of recruits, make those families feel comfortable sending their son to Georgia for 3 or 4 years. That has always been, to me, the most underrated aspect of all of this. As much as we talk about social media edits and everything else, that's the thing that probably matters more than anything else. Here's what else matters. Gator Hater Updater, 1,333 days. Dog Nation Daily presented by ESOG. We'll see you back here again tomorrow.